Welcome back to Takeoff, a Points and Miles podcast by 10X Travel. On this episode, we're getting tactical. We're rounding up strategies that are worth adding to your Points and Miles toolkit, like maximizing shopping and dining portals, repositioning flights to unlock better reward space, building an emergency stash of points so that you're never stuck. We've compiled these strategies from previous episodes, and you can kind of think of this as your greatest hits playbook. As always, just a quick disclaimer that these segments aired at different times, and some of the specific portal rates or program rules or earning details might have changed since the original air date. The strategies themselves are evergreen. You can still use these, but verify the current numbers before you put them to work. All right, let's get into it.
Let's talk about those three main types of credit card points. There are more of them than there are types of outfits on this podcast in the last two episodes. those three types are, first one is bank transferable points. These are often called flexible points or bank points. These are points that are associated with a bank that has the bank's name in them and usually a few extra words. So that's the first type. Second one, co-branded airline or hotel points. This is maybe the most common ones that many people are aware of. This is like American Airlines points, Hyatt points. If it has the name of an airline or hotel in it, that's one of these airline or hotel programs. Last but not least, but actually when we get to it, maybe least, I'll make that case later, cashback or fixed value points. These are generally types of points that you can redeem for statement credits, actual cashback, gift cards, etc. Often not tied to travel use, often have very straightforward, predictable values, simple, easy to use, generally lower value. Each type does have its own advantages and limitations. So knowing which one to focus on, you know, is going to vary per person. There's going to be some directional stuff to know. But, you know, think about these different types of points, like different tools in a toolbox. You know, some of them are multi-purpose, can do many different things, Swiss Army knife type things. Some are very specialized and do one thing really, really well. And some are just kind of simple and reliable. So let's break that down. So first, I'll toss it over to Emily here first to give us a high-level overview of unnamed, generic, non-branded bank transferable point program.
Perfect. So without naming any of them, the general way that these work is that you can transfer them to multiple airline and hotel partners. And a lot of times the banks will also have bank portals where you can redeem your points at a fixed value, usually somewhere from 1 to 1.5 cents per point. So if you listen to our last episode about Virgin Atlantic, an example of like all the different types of points that you can transfer to get Virgin Atlantic points. There's a lot more potential for outsized value with flexible or transferable points, as we call them, because they're not limited to just one fixed value as long as you transfer your points out. You can get as much or as little value out of them as you want, but you can book business class flights, which makes them infinitely more valuable. You can book luxury hotels, which gets you more value out of them than using them through a portal. You can redeem them for statement credits or cash back. Please don't do this. This is generally like the lowest value you're going to get outside of maybe gift cards, but you can. That's why they're called flexible points, because you can use them in a bunch of different ways. The last thing I'll say about them is that banks frequently offer transfer bonuses. So they can be anywhere from 20% to 50%, sometimes even more, where you're essentially maybe doubling the number of points that you get on the hotel or airline partner that you're transferring to on that end of things. So we mentioned a lot in our Virgin Atlantic episode where just because, you know, you have to pay 6,000 point Virgin Atlantic points, you can't just transfer 4,500 bank points because there's a transfer bonus. So it's a great way to save money even further, or save points even further when these are actively happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the ways that I thought of when we were putting together this episode to think about flexible points is you'll often hear us talk about it's like a more diverse option, right? If you can transfer them to a number of airlines, a number of hotels, and that gives you more power, right? It means that you can deploy your points where you need them, when you need them, instead of having to have the right points at that moment. To maybe help put it into perspective, I literally counted the unique number of airlines and hotels across the five main transferable points currencies. And if you hold all five of those currencies, you have access to 27 different airline partners and 7 different hotel partners. I mean, that shows the size of the value. You can take 5 and have the ability to have points in 34 different programs at any time. A number of those are instantaneous. Not all of them are instantaneous transfers, and that causes some headaches. But that's the power. When people tell me that they want, you know, oh well, I really like this airline, so I want their points, there's like, that's fine. But in terms of prioritizing, and maybe I'm getting a little too far ahead of which one I personally prefer,
it's this one. It's this one.
Yeah,
right? Yeah,
yeah, it's this one. Yeah, no one's gonna argue with it being this one, like with some general exceptions. Like, as a general rule, flexible points are always better, because if you think of it, instead of I've got like this one points currency, and instead think of it as I technically have the potential for any of these 18 that partner with this bank, that's really where that value comes from. And that's why we harp on it so much, as being so much more valuable. There's times when it makes sense to have specific airline or hotel programs. There's some airline and hotel programs that I would advocate make more sense to earn from their cards than transferring to them. These are exceptions to the rule. The general rule is you're going to get more value from your flexible points than you're going to get from a single isolated airline or hotel programs points.
Yeah, to the earlier toolbox analogy, these are the Swiss Army knives. They don't all have the same combination of tools that are included in each Swiss Army knife. Like, they'll have a little bit of variation to them, but they overlap a lot. And of course, kind of the common thread through all of this is you don't have to choose just one of these. You can kind of mix and match, hop from one to the other. You don't have to pick one bank transfer program. But when you're looking at like, hey, what's the most versatile tool I can grab? I have options of a Swiss Army knife, a screwdriver, and a hammer. And by the way, the Swiss Army knife has a screwdriver and a hammer on it. Actually, it'd be cool if it had a hammer on it. But it has these things. It's like, it can do that. Yeah, so these are five main programs. Really, there's a couple of kind of, what do you call, fringe or more ancillary programs too. They, between all of them, they touch pretty much every airline, except for American Airlines kind of being the big exception at the moment, and we'll probably get into that a little bit later. But they can do all the things because they have so many different options. And if you have a credit card that has a bank's name on it, but not a hotel or airline's name on it, and doesn't earn cash back, it's probably participating in one of these programs. And
I like to just think about it in the sense that you want to have as diverse of a points portfolio as you can, so that say you get an award alert, which we offer on our website. You can sign up at 10xtravel.com/award alerts. There's lots of other people who do this as well. Maybe you get an award alert that says there's a deal on a Virgin Atlantic flight. That's the only airline I can think of now, because we just recorded the episode
20 minutes ago.
Right, but you want to have a diverse portfolio so that you can actually book that award alert. If you're just only earning Virgin Atlantic points and you get an award alert that says there's a flight deal on something through Flying Blue, you're kind of screwed. So just think about it from that perspective of, like, the more diverse portfolio you have, the more you can book.
I mean, I think this is something we all feel very strongly about and could talk about for days. And I say that, and then I'm going to talk about it more. But like, layering on Bryce's example, one of the common objections we get is, well, I know how to use these, or like, this works really well for my one specific instance. That's fine. Like, again, like, these are all exceptions. But using Bryce's example, you're trying to pick a tool to solve a job, but you don't know what that job is. So if you're given the choice between a hammer and a Swiss Army knife, and you don't know, are you trying to cut something? Are you trying to screw something in? Are there going to be nails? Like, you don't know what you're actually trying to accomplish. In general, the better option is the Swiss Army knife, because it's going to give you more chances to succeed than the hammer. if you know you've got nails, there's times when using the hammer is the right choice and is the right option. And so if you have the context and know that, that's great. Use the hammer. But in a vacuum without any other context, those transferable points are your Swiss Army knife that's going to solve more problems for you.
Yes.
Maybe problems isn't the right word, but...
Give you more opportunities, I suppose, or ways to solve the problem, if you will. There are a couple drawbacks to these flexible bank point programs, and I feel like the first one here is really the biggest one, and the reason why most people don't even think of these, and that is learning curve. These points programs require a bit of an understanding of kind of just the many different ways that can be redeemed. You can transfer to hotels, you can book through travel portal, a lot of times you can take cash back, you can get gift cards, you can... You know, cash them all out and get your lottery chance at a lottery ticket for a flight to Mars on Virgin. It gets pretty complex.
Which actually isn't available anymore.
Oh no! So. Boom, we have to strike that.
Yeah,
maybe it'll come back by the time the episode airs. Yeah, but I think most people overlook these because they go to that immediate brand association of like, I often fly Delta, therefore I should get a credit card that says that name on it, and they don't even realize that in a lot of these situations, if you really dive into the nuance. The best card for one particular airline is often not even that airline's card. Like, you could earn more for all the same spend and same situation by putting it on one of these cards that earns transferable points that transfers to the airline that you like. But something about that just misses a lot of folks, and they just love that brand association. And of course, yeah. The cards that participate in these programs don't come with a lot of the perks like priority boarding, free check bags, status earning, et cetera, because they aren't tied to an airline. It's kind of what you trade off for flexibility. And then the second part is limited portal value. Some of the points are worth less when redeemed via the bank's travel portal to book travel through it. That's often a less strategic way to redeem them, but not one that you should skip over entirely. That will frustrate people at times, especially when that price through the portal is higher than it would be if you booked directly with a particular airline's points. But those situations are pretty rare in my experience. And usually it's just as simple as if you understand how these programs work, you quickly realize the value. But if you don't, then you go with old tried and true, which airline do you like to fly the most, you should get their card thinking.
Yeah, I think these two are just kind of tied together, these two drawbacks, because so much of the bank marketing around their cards is that their points are worth exactly this amount when you redeem them through the portal. They're not, you know, gonna tell you that you can transfer them and get more value out of them. So a lot of people think, That's how I use my points. I use them through the portal. They're worth the same amount every time. And so that's where this learning curve comes in, because your everyday person doesn't even know that option exists. And then you look at the transfer partner cheat sheet on our website and you get overwhelmed because you're like, wow, there's 27 airlines I could book. And then you start to spiral, and we're here to help.
We are here to help. Yeah. Yeah. So option number two, or type of points number two rather, would be your airline and hotel specific points. These are the ones that I'd say most people are familiar with. It's what you earn if you are doing paid travel, paid flights, paid hotels. A lot of people have small amounts of these in many different programs from the occasional trips that you have. And again, they're familiar brands. They're attached to an airline or hotel. The naming convention is pretty straightforward. Really using them is pretty straightforward because you only have, you know, one or two places to look instead of exploring all your many options. And you generally are going to be able to redeem them for free travel with that particular brand, airline or hotel, or their partners. So that level of simplicity is often very appealing to people. The cards that earn these types of points tend to come with perks that are associated with the airline or hotel they're tied to. So this is your room upgrades, your status accelerators, your free check bags kind of thing. I often describe these as kind of like a trap for the reasons that we just mentioned. People kind of get into that, like, I'm a this type of person, I earn these types of points, I carry this card as well, and they don't realize kind of what they're missing out. But yeah.
It doesn't mean that like these are bad cards to be going for or the wrong points to pursue. Again, if you've listened to every episode until this point, you're probably yelling at me about talking about like an airline program that I'm a big fan of is United and how to earn their points. It doesn't mean that there's not value here. Like, we're just talking in terms of general tiers of value, like which one should you prioritize, and just like understanding how they fit in with one another. There's some hotel points that I would never transfer my flexible points to. Marriott is a good example. Without a solid transfer bonus in general, I honestly don't know when I've ever, I'm sure I have transferred flexible points to Marriott. And actually, I know an example. This is a big throwback. I transferred SPG points to Marriott back in the day.
I was,
we can say that one because they're not around anymore.
We can.
Yeah.
We can. Which SPG was a weird one. It was a hotel program, but transferred to a number of things.
It was the best. Yeah. Shout out to everyone who knows what we're talking about, SPG. That means you're an OG in points and miles. You've been doing this for a while. And their cards were purple. An underutilized color in the bank branding world.
Yeah.
They were nice. Like Marriott's one of those where if you ask me how I earn Marriott points, I prefer earning them through co-branded cards because their points values and virtually everyone that transfers to Marriott transfers one-to-one. So you've got a high points cost, a low transfer ratio. I just don't want to sacrifice that many points to transfer to Marriott. So it doesn't mean that there aren't programs where it makes sense to earn through co-branded airline and hotel cards. There definitely are ones where they are, but in general, like if I'm choosing between earning Marriott points or a bank's points, oh man, I had to think about that one. If this is the conflict and when I'm having to choose which one I'm gonna go for without any additional information, I'm always gonna choose the bank's points because there's more flexibility there, even if that flexibility means I end up transferring them to Marriott in the future. Who knows?
Yeah, a kind of like audio visual example that I give to folks who I'm kind of explaining this to who are new to points and miles is I often say, like, if you picture like airline and hotel cards, like actually like physically in front of you, transferable points and the cards that earn them are almost like you take like 10 or 12 of these bank hotel cards and you just like smash them together into one card that has all 10 to 12 brands on it. It's like this earns points with all of these brands and I get to pick which one. That I find to be like an unlock to the typical situation of someone is like, I carry a card that gives me American Airlines points. I love American Airlines. Yeah, yeah. It's like, well, yeah, that's one slice of all these many you can earn. You're not giving that up. You're just adding the ability to have other types of points and miles that you can earn. What are shopping portals and dining programs? So let's first explain kind of the difference between those two things and what they are. Both of them can help you earn extra points and miles for things that you're already gonna do anyway without getting on a plane, but they do work somewhat differently. First, shopping portals. Shopping portals are websites that allow you to earn additional points and miles or sometimes cash back simply by visiting them first and then clicking through those sites to get to the website of the retailer that you're ultimately shopping with. It's kind of just one extra step at the beginning of your journey. Go here first, click on the link, you bounce over to the website that you're gonna go to anyway, but that extra step rewards you with points and miles based on the amount of money that you purchase. I find it's helpful to know like kind of why this works because I'm still confused as to how the conference call thing worked, but why this works is because these websites, these shopping portals, they are affiliates of all the major, you know, online brands, if you will. They receive a commission for anything that you purchase having come from those sites, and they kind of share that commission with you by giving you points and miles. So it's almost like, you know, referring your friend to Uber. If anyone does that anymore, who doesn't have Uber anymore? But you refer your friend to Uber, it's like, hey, if you use my Uber link to sign up, I'll give you 500 points and miles. Kind of same idea. So that's how they work. These are completely free to use. You have to sign up and create an account to get started. It takes like maybe 2 minutes at most. And it's an easy way to earn points and miles from the ground. And again, for things that you're kind of already doing. So that's shopping portals. Dining programs also allow you to earn points and miles for doing things you normally do, but they're a lot lower touch, if you will. These are programs mostly from airlines and hotels where you sign up, create an account, you link a credit card of yours one single time, and then anytime you use that credit card to pay for dining out at a participating restaurant, you get bonus points and miles for that purchase. So these, you don't have to do the extra step or open up a browser in the actual restaurant before you're dining, because that's a lot of fun. You just link it once, forget about it, and you, at least in my case, earn points and miles without even realizing it. You just get a little email like, hey, how was your meal at Bryce's Tacos? You earned 85 extra points for that. It's like, oh, cool. So both of them, same outcome, but the mechanism is slightly different. Key thing to know is that shopping portals, you have to use them every time. That one extra click to earn extra points. Dining portals are more of like a set it and forget it kind of thing. And you often don't even realize you're earning extra points, but they do start to stack up over time, especially if you dine out as often as I do lately. Good fun. That's how I justify it. So most major airlines and hotels have shopping portals. Big ones being AAdvantage, eShopping, Mileage Plus Shopping,
there Delta Sky Miles
Shopping.
Yep.
Oh, sorry, AAdvantage. Here we go, wrong pronunciations again. To find them, you can just Google like American Airlines. You know, you're typing, so you don't pronounce it. American Airlines Shopping, and you'll find it right there at the top. Hotels used to have these too, but most of them have shut down. I think Wyndham is actually the only one that's still remaining. So shopping portals, mainly an airline thing. Dining programs, also most major airlines have one. And then you do have more hotels participating in this one too. You have Hilton, Marriott, and IHG are the main ones. So, and those ones again, set it, forget it, earn extra points. There's some key things to know that we'll kind of talk about here later on the episode on how to use them, but all your favorite airlines and hotels have these tools available. Now there's one additional tool that's a bit of a hybrid of sorts that plays a huge role in this space, and that is Rakuten. You've probably heard of Rakuten before. Rakuten is a standalone shopping portal. It's not directly tied to an airline or hotel. They give you cash back for having clicked through and going to any major retailer and purchasing. But the reason why it works well for points and miles is because Rakuten has an option where you can choose to earn your cash back in the form of a major transferable bank currency, of which I can't say the name on this podcast for previously mentioned rules that we have to follow. But there's a link in our show notes to an article that covers it. It's one of the main ones. It's probably one of the ones you choose to earn. And you can take your cash back as these types of points at a value of $1 per point, or I always mess up the decimal places here. $1 of cash back would be a point.
That's correct. That's correct.
So you can potentially get higher value redemptions out of that. So that, you know, despite Rakuten not being associated with an airline or hotel, effectively lets you earn airline or hotel points or travel points by using them instead. And you can opt to take cash back if you prefer as well. Rakuten is also free. It even comes with a sign-up bonus. It's usually like $20 to $50 if you sign up and spend about $20 to $50. We have a link to that in the show notes too. Refer your friends once you sign up. It's an easy way to earn some points and miles. And of course, using it for shopping. Now, Rakuten, it plays a key role here because it's often preferable to earn those transferable points and miles instead of just with a particular airline or hotel. So if you're thinking, all right, do I want to use the American Airlines shopping portal of the pronunciation that I struggle with? Do I want to use the Marriott one or would I rather just use Rakuten, which could potentially like reach both of those for redemptions? Most people are going to go for Rakuten. But there's a use case for all of them. So in terms of like use cases for shopping portals, you know, anything you'd normally buy online, start there. I think the most popular one that we see in the group, and I'd be curious on your thoughts on this, Matt and Emily, like Apple. If you're buying a new iPhone, new laptop, AirPods, like you're usually spending quite a bit of money. I don't know if you can go to Apple's website and spend less than $100. So those really start to add up.
Only if you're increasing your storage for like 99 cents a month.
I guess that's a good point. Yeah. Or like, my charging cable. I left it in a hotel room somewhere. So
even those, I don't know. They're getting expensive.
That's true. Yep. That is true. I think I've purchased like 4 sets of AirPods in the last year. Just leave them all over the place. So we see Apple a lot. We see like Home Depot, like if you're buying appliances or doing some sort of house project, Sephora, Nike, like you're purchasing new running shoes, as mentioned in the intro. Those are some of the more common ones you see, but really I think there's over 1,000 participating retailers on all these sites. So whatever you're buying online, you probably have an opportunity to earn extra points and miles through one of these portals. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, but for me, I generally don't do this for anything I'm buying that's like less than $100. To have to like look up like which one to use and make a choice and think through that for like an incremental like 8 points doesn't seem worth it. But I'm curious how each of you approach this.
It's not really like a conscious decision. I usually just only remember to do it if I'm spending like around that threshold of money. And the other thing that trips me up too is so with these like major retailers like Amazon and Walmart, like so much of my shopping is just done through Amazon, and that's not really one that you can earn extra points on. It varies, like depends on what the category of the product is, but like I try my hardest to remember if I'm like going to a different retailer's website, I'm like, okay, this is something I can actually use Rakuten for.
I primarily use Rakuten for the flexible earn of it, because it's earning flexible points versus using an individual airline or hotel shopping portal. So that's my go-to. And the only reason I use as much as I do is because I have the browser's extension installed on my computer. So it literally alerts me and tells me when I'm on the site, like, hey, here's what it earns and how much it earns. Just click it to initiate the session. Now, a lot of sites, you don't even have to refresh the page. It just kind of auto-applies it, which is good. So highly recommend the browser extensions for making it even easier.
Yeah, I feel like I have so many of those browser extensions that every time I go to buy something online, there's like 8 of them that pop up and prompt me to put in like coupon codes and all sorts of stuff. I think I deleted the Rakuten one in a kind of a fit of rage and purging all of them at some point, but I should probably look at downloading it again.
Yeah.
Yep. So
they always make you feel so guilty when you click away from them. Like, you really don't want to save 2% on this purchase.
Please wait like 20 minutes while I try 100 different coupon codes, which virtually never work. But you might save like $2 or get free shipping if you just sit around. So
one thing to note, like, you mentioned Apple and other just big purchases. One thing you have to pay attention to is Apple's notorious for this, is the pay attention to the terms and conditions of their arrangement. A lot of times with Apple, like computers, phones, all that kind of stuff are excluded from earning cashback. You can only earn it on a lot of the accessories, but sometimes they are. Literally, if they're running their 4 or 5X multiple, a lot of times that'll exclude like computers and or the iPhones, but it'll include pretty much everything else. So you do have to read the fine print, unfortunately, to make sure that your purchase is qualifying.
That fine print is what prevents Matt from being computer guy on an episode 10 years from now when they ask the opening question and they're like, that guy from North Carolina bought 1,000 computers and sold them online. And, you know, they're getting wise to the game here.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's kind of some things to know about, like which shopping portal you might consider using for which purchase, because that does vary in terms of how many points they'll give you per dollar spent. And for that, I'll let Emily tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah. I think generally speaking, it's going to be hard to compete with the number of points you can earn using Rakuten, but most of the airline shopping portals will give you like 1 or 2 points per dollar spent. So if you're spending $100, then, you know, an extra 100 or 200 points earned on that purchase. But sometimes it can vary pretty greatly. They'll have special promotions, especially during like sales or holiday seasons, where you can earn even like 8 to 12x on specific stores, depending on the seasonality. Sometimes there's super, super high deal earning rates, like 25x. Those are usually for things that are like lesser known merchants or subscriptions or wine clubs or software. I think we've seen pretty often like Life Alert deals where you can earn like 25x points on signing up for Life Alert, and people don't even need Life Alert and they'll sign up just for the points. But sometimes the math makes sense on that. So generally speaking, it sounds like it might be kind of hard to figure out which portal you should be using in order to earn the most points. But there's a website called Cashback Monitor, which makes this super easy. So all you have to do is go to the website and it'll pull in all the rates for every shopping portal, like Rakuten or the airline shopping portals or the hotel shopping portals. And then you can compare, you can type the specific retailer that you're shopping at, like Nike, and it'll show you what the earn rates are across the board. So you can kind of make that call easily rather than having to go to every single loyalty program shopping portal and figure it out for yourself.
Yeah, it almost feels like Google Flights, right? Like, oh, I'm gonna shop to buy a flight. Let me first go to Delta and search. Yeah. Nope, don't like that. Now let's go to United and search. Oh, nope, seems silly.
Yeah, it just aggregates it all for you. So once you've figured out which one you wanna use, all you have to do is then navigate to that specific shopping portal, and then it'll redirect you to the retailer's website, and then you just shop as normal. Just use a credit card that has a better earn rate on that category as well too, if you want to try and double stack. So if you're buying something that's like entertainment or travel in some way, make sure you're thinking through the last step of which card you're paying with too.
stacks on stacks on stacks, right? And mm-hmm. that's what they're referencing when they say that.
Yeah.
Yes. Matt, can you tell us a little bit more about how hashtag stacks on stacks on stacks works?
Yeah, exactly. They're stacking. The best way to do what Emily's referencing is essentially putting together multiple promos, so shopping portals, plus maybe you have offers on your card. Some of the issuing banks offer additional offers on your card that you can activate at a retailer. So if you can, the really good way to maximize it is to be able to activate some of those offers and use a shopping portal and use a card that's earning points for that category, that you're essentially triple dipping at that point. You may hear it being referred to as that sometimes. Combine that, yeah, exactly, with either the shopping or the dining portals, and you're really going to come out ahead. For example, like you can earn three times advantage miles, as Bryce would say, or the rest of the world will say advantage miles on your purchases at Home Depot through the American Airlines shopping portal. If you are also paying with an American Airlines co-branded credit card, you might be able to earn 2 points per dollar on top of that. So you're coming out at five American Airlines miles per dollar on the spend there. So that's just, I would call that a basic stack. But that's totally fine, because as you've heard here, most of us half the time don't even use a portal. So you're coming out ahead on that purchase, even though you may think that it sounds super simple.
Do either of you have what you would consider a points emergency fund?
I don't, but part of that is just because I keep a big stash of flexible points, and most of those transfer instantly or as close to instantly as possible. So like kind of enough within the programs that I would use. Alaska is probably the only one, but I keep a stash in there, obviously, just because there's not really many options for transferring those in. But yeah, otherwise I feel pretty confident that at a moment's notice, I could more or less get a flight anywhere in the world that I need with kind of the points I have.
I'm kind of the same. I don't have any points inherently earmarked or set aside for an emergency. But this is one of the reasons why I don't like to transfer points outside of flexible currencies until I'm ready to redeem. So that way my balance, like my primary points balance, is virtually all in flexible points. And what that means is if there is an emergency, I know that I've got points, whether it's to transfer them to a partner or kind of from Emily's date with a travel portal. I sense a little bit of your anxiety there on that one. You know, like having them with a flexible points that you can book through a travel portal. Sometimes during a travel emergency, using the portal instead of hunting for award availability across different airlines or hotels or whatever it is, it's just plug it in, find whatever option works for you, is sometimes the best peace of mind. So that's the strategy that I take, is keep most of my points flexible. So that way, in case of an emergency, I can transfer them or book something through a portal.
Yeah. I'm probably the same, but I first like to try and use my orphaned points.
Sure.
If I'm in some kind of travel emergency or trying to book something last minute, like I'll look for something that's already in a program. That way I'm not transferring more. Obviously, in the scenario I described in the beginning, I was willing to sacrifice those transferred points if I needed to. But it's nice. Like, I'm pretty sure we've talked about Travis's bank of Virgin Atlantic miles that you've got. Like, if you were in a pinch, like I might try and use those first. But ultimately, it's whatever is available and you can book before somebody else does.
Yeah. Or my now newly orphaned Air Canada miles again.
I've had 80,000 airplane miles sitting for about 18 months, and I still haven't been able to use them yet.
I mean, not
that they're hard to use, just it hasn't lined up availability or routing or whatever for any sort of stuff in the meantime. So I'm going to use them.
260,000 orphaned from the pandemic. I finally used them. And literally today was looking to book a return flight from Australia next year. And the only option I found in business class so far is Air India.
And it's like, okay, transferred to Air Canada, and then it aired out and the award availability disappeared. So now I have 115,000 Air Canada points orphaned yet again. So,
but that's your travel emergency fund now.
That's my travel emergency fund, which if I don't find any other availability for this return, somehow I'll have to use them for that, maybe.
I'll just tell you, that was a blessing in disguise, not having to fly Air Indy all the way home.
It's the A350 at least. So
at least it is the new one. Okay.
Yeah.
Touche. This is not a knock on Air India. Just it's a tough product except for the A350. So
yeah. And I haven't tried it, so I figured why not?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Apparently not. I could have been flying, this is a whole diversion. I could have been flying Qantas back. Mm. I'm flying it there.
Oh, okay.
And so the friends I'm going on the trip with, I texted them, and one of them was like, oh, I didn't need a flight there, but I needed a flight back. So I booked that. And I, of course, did not look at the return options first. And there was one seat. So he got the return one. And I was like, dang, that would have been nice.
You're a good friend.
I try to be.
You may not have intended to be a good friend, but you were a good friend.
So if you're going to transfer them, what programs stand out to you? You know, obviously booking through the portal is an easy way to handle things during an emergency. And obviously getting the best value shouldn't be your highest priority. But let's face it, we can say that all we want in a travel emergency, like unless it's a like life or death emergency.
Yeah.
If it's an inconvenienced emergency, we're virtually all going to be like, okay, I found this availability. Now who do I transfer the points to? Mm-hmm. So if you're in a travel emergency and needing to make a last minute redemption, what programs do you look at to transfer points to?
I'm going to make a call that I don't think I would normally make, but Delta is pretty good with last minute availability for cheap points wise. I just helped my brother book a last minute flight. I don't know that I'd call it a travel emergency. I just wanted him to stay a couple extra days. but he didn't even have to transfer points. He had 6,000 points just sitting in his Delta account, and the flight was 4,000 points. So
that's awesome.
That was pretty sweet. So, I mean, obviously it depends where you're traveling to, but their last minute availability can be pretty decent.
Especially domestically.
Yeah.
I think last minute is the case for pretty much all programs. You know, if it's last minute, you know, 6 hours before flight, they obviously have algorithms that look at this and like, all right, we don't really want that many seats going out empty. So, you know, liquidation sale, come on in, whatever it might be. That often happens. So that can be a heck of a hard time for most people to do planning wise with logistics, kids, childcare, whatever it might be, vacation time, et cetera. But some of your best options can literally open up just hours before departure. So roll the dice if you're feeling like a gambling person.
Let's talk about like what a repositioning flight actually is and why you should care. Simply put, a repositioning flight is a separate ticket you book to get to another airport where a better award deal is available. So for example, if I found award availability out of Dallas, but not on the connecting leg from Houston to Dallas, well, I would book the award flight from Dallas. So now I just have to get to Dallas. So, you know, I could drive, I could take the bus. There's a lot of ways to do it. But the most common is just book a separate flight to get there. You're repositioning to access that additional award availability, or maybe just a better rate. You know, like another example might be you live in Kansas City, and flying out of Kansas City, they're charging 180,000 miles in business class to go to Europe. But out of JFK, it's 60K. Well, you're saving 120,000 points. So you just book a separate flight to JFK
first. You can also do it on the way back, right? Like I just discussed, it's I'm flying into New York and then I'll book a separate flight home. Those are generally a little bit safer. Those risks tend to materialize more on your outbound because like no one's really going to be upset if you spend an extra day on your trip, but if you miss your flight to get to your destination, then that's a bit of a bummer. Yeah. So, and like the airlines don't really care if you're like, oh, I missed my flight, but it wasn't on the same ticket. Then that's not their fault. Right. That's not their.
Well, yeah, in terms of contract of carriage, they literally are not responsible.
Yeah.
And a lot of the airlines have specific provisions about that in the contract of carriage. So,
yeah. I mean, it's like literally no different than if you overslept your alarm and you were late to the airport and you didn't make it in time. Like,
however, there is a. I don't know if it's official or unofficial, but they literally call it like the flat tire, like rule provision, whatever, courtesy to where like they don't have to, but they can like try to accommodate you in a situation. Yeah,
I
like
actually
that.
have taken advantage of that once.
Oh, nice.
through United, coming back from Denver to Houston on a work trip. And, we were out, in like the mountain area. That's what I'm calling it. We were out in the mountain area.
We were on the mountain area of Denver because, you know, everybody knows that one little spot where that is.
And if you're in Denver, you'll know that there's like one tunnel that you have to go through. Well, unfortunately, whenever I left, there was a truck that caught on fire in that tunnel. So it got blocked down. And it was also, I think, July 4th weekend. So traffic was a nightmare. So my like 2 hour drive turned into a 6 hour drive. And I tried.
You got like pretty close to the tunnel down I-70, and then you had to turn around and go back and take 285.
Yeah, I could see the tunnel. Like there were like 30 cars. I was there like basically right as it was shutting down.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a fun place to be.
No. So thankfully, like, called United, and I was actually trying to get them to change it out of
Vail.
Like out of Vail. But I was going to make it there like 10 minutes before the flight departed. So I was like, that one's not going to happen. So that was how they told me. They were like, oh, we've got this like flat tire provision. Like, we'll move you and not charge you any difference, which was really nice.
Nice.
That was a fun little side quest. let's talk why you would want to reposition, because you might be like we obviously in some of the examples highlighted different availability or the points cost being lower, but like why it can be powerful is you can unlock different international hubs, right? Mm-hmm. Like I can't fly from Houston to Cairo, but if I wanted to go to Egypt, I could reposition to DC where Egypt Air flies from there to Cairo. You can obviously get better award availability, lower mileage costs. Sometimes you can get lower taxes and fees. You know, like especially if you're maybe in London and you reposition somewhere else in Europe for your return flight back.
And the premium like products too, if you're trying to fly a specific cabin and that cabin doesn't fly out of your home airport, can be a good reason.
Yeah.
I think one of the overlooked things for repositioning flights too is something that might sound weird to a lot of people, but airlines a lot of times make their award availability based on what's called married segments. So without getting too convoluted, basically, if you live in or trying to fly out of a hub city, a lot of times you might search for a flight and you might find zero availability. But if you look out of a different city, you'll literally see availability flying through that hub to your destination. So, for example, if I searched Charlotte to London on American Airlines, I might see zero availability, or I might see the nonstop flight is 250,000 American Airlines miles one way. But if I search Greensboro to London and fly Greensboro to Charlotte, Charlotte to London on that same flight I searched before, I might literally see that it's available for 70,000 American Airlines miles. I actually see this quite regularly. They do this because of a number of things, but basically demand and supply and demand, basic economics. They know if you're in a hub, you're going to be potentially more willing to pay a lot more money, a premium, to just hop on that nonstop. So adding a short connecting segment, that part doesn't make sense. It still doesn't make sense to me, but like, that's how they operate. So take advantage of it. So if you're in a hub city, we see this a lot with readers in the group. They'll post that they can never find, especially, I think it's probably more American Airlines than other airlines, but I know other ones do it. But for instance, like, we see people all the time. I live in Dallas, so I have the American Airlines card, but I can never, you know, use my miles to find stuff like you guys are always talking about. And I'm like, yeah, you're kind of screwed. Well, positioning flights can be one way to help you alleviate that. Now, I'm not saying that if you live in Charlotte, you should drive to Greensboro to book the flight to then fly back to Charlotte to then go to London to save, you know, 180,000 America miles. That's up to you, but
I mean, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, weirder things have happened, that's for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like not that different when you think about it. It's not that different from like how they do cash tickets, where you'll look from your home airport and it's $1,000, but someone else will connect through and get on the same flight for $500. This happened when we did our 10X travel trip to the Galapagos a few years ago. I really wanted the nonstop from Houston down to Ecuador, but it was so much more expensive for me. So I flew American through Miami. And then, of course, Mr. Matt flies United through Houston. Because
it was super cheap,
like more competitively priced. So it's functionally the same idea. They're just taking into account where their frequent flyers are based, really. And
there's more competition there, so they can just charge more.
Yep. So to sort of put a bow on it, positioning flights can be an option for you to sort of work around some of those potential restrictions, especially, I would say, like in places like Texas, where you've got a couple different hubs, Dallas and Houston, think the Northeast, think DC, Philly, New Jersey, New York City, you know, Boston. You can get in Boston, exactly. You can get kind of some of those hubs pretty easily and relatively inexpensively to where it might make sense to, you know, book a flight from Philly to Newark to London instead of just Newark to London, or, you know, or something like that. Just to kind of get around some of those restrictions.
Matt and his team have built out three new features inside of My 10X for subscribers. You know, the community and award alerts is helping you find your people and helping you find the destinations you want to go to. But these tools are really helping you get more value from your points from day one. So, Matt, you've got three here, I guess. So take it away.
Perfect. All right, we'll go through these one at a time. I'm not sure if you all have noticed, but it seems that banks, as of the last couple of years, have an affinity for making their products coupon books, just credit after credit after credit. Historically, there's not been great ways to track this. You know, you can make your own spreadsheet. There are some tools that exist, but we decided to take the matter in our own hands and include this straight into My 10X, and we've done that. So there's something like 35,000 individual trackable benefits across like 5,000 cards, which is just insane. And that's growing and expanding as those unfortunately get added more and more like every day, it seems. But, you know, all your pesky DoorDash credits or Uber Eats credits, or I don't even know what else, you know, all those
streaming credits, yeah.
Streaming credits, exactly. There, a lot of them are $3, $5, and $10 a month. So if you miss 1 month, it's not the end of the world, but like, you're also paying and leaving money on the table. This now will give you kind of a tool and resource to be able to easily track those and track the utilization of them. Help you remember when they're expiring. You'll get notifications about that. You'll be able to kind of see across all the different cards, one, what credits you have, and then two, you know, kind of a quick snapshot into how many of you've used this month, this year, or what different sort of time period, to also be able to kind of evaluate and assess the long-term value you're getting from a card too. You know, obviously the benefits aren't the only component of it, but they're becoming more and more of it as they keep getting added and banks keep raising the annual fees, especially on the premium card. So being sure you're using them is a key core component of making sure you're getting value out of that annual fee you're paying for those cards. So
yeah, I think that's such a huge benefit of the benefit tracker. It's like,
whoa.
Like Travis just admitted that it took him 2 years to close cards.
Yeah.
Now it makes it way easier. You could just log in, see which ones you've actually used. Did you break even or get more out of the annual fee that you were being charged, that's like a quick, should I close this? Yes, no. Now, it might take you 2 years to actually make the phone call, but at least you have your answer.
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing just from this was having a centralized place to see all the stuff. In my head, I have a generally good idea about, if I look at a card, it's, yeah, it's got this and that. And I can't remember if that's monthly or quarterly or, you know, have a decently good idea. But now having essentially a full list of all that stuff broken down into sort of bite-sized ways to be able to see what I have to use and by when is super, super helpful. And I think our users are going to love that. Early adopters already are ranting and raving about it, not to toot our own horn, but finding tons of value in it so far. So it's exciting to see.
I mean, even as a person who does this as my career, with the changes to cards and the coupon book changes over the past couple of years, this has already helped me find some credits that, like, I've just forgotten about, that I haven't thought about. This weekend, we went out to dinner at a new sushi place, and I happened to be inside of the benefits tracker and was reminded that one of my cards and one of my wife's cards has a dining credit. And so I checked and the restaurant was on the right dining platform. So lo and behold, I got an extra $200 worth of discounts that would have expired because it's quarterly and I might not have used. So
God, you got more value out of what you have to pay for 10x Travel Plus just in one dinner. Yeah. Just from logging in. Unbelievable. And I know we haven't even told the people yet, but you have.
I have, yeah. And I mean like that's the nice thing, right? Is with how the points and miles landscape is changing, it's just such a mental load to keep that all in your head. Not,
and that's by design.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From the bank side. They want to offer you these credits. They don't want you to actually redeem them.
Yeah.
Or redeem all of them.
Yeah. And so even like having a centralized place to see them and take that mental load off of thinking of what cards might have a benefit for this, instead I can just go in and look and see, has already saved me. Actually, hold on, got to do the math. In the past month, I've already gotten $950 worth of credit from it.
You can obviously see that from the dashboard, too. You know, if you had it.
$950.
But that's great. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some like specific travel credits for booking through a bank's travel portal, which I was doing. I was going to use all points for it. And then I was like, wait a second, I can just adjust the points down and get this credit there. So... it's one of my favorite aspects here, just saving that mental load and helping me save money.
Yeah, it's nice.
I agree. Awesome. Yeah, so that's one of the ones we're launching with. Next up, just kind of a best cards tool. You know, you'll see people put stickers on their card or just try to remember, hey, I need to use this card at for gas or this card for groceries. We're helping you out here too. We'll analyze your wallet and tell you based on a number of different criteria, but typically just kind of overall value of like the points and stuff that are earned on that card, which card in your wallet you should be using at different categories, restaurants, groceries, home improvement. You know, there's quite a few sort of different categories that you can, you'll be able to see to kind of help with that decision paralysis or analysis paralysis, and based on the math, be the best option for you. Now, as you might know, some of these decisions are subjective. If you're trying to earn Alaska miles, you might use that card at your home improvement purchase, even though you're earning less than another, you know, currency might earn you or something like that. So we're giving you the best, but that does not mean it is the only one you can use. You got to use your knowledge and judgment or just goals with it. But again, I think it'll be super helpful for people to have quick access to as a reference to be able to see, especially since it's based exactly on your data.
Yeah, I think that's the best part for me, is like there's tons of editorial content, articles about what are the best cards for dining, what are the best cards for gas, but like at least in the points and miles space, like you really shouldn't be opening a card just because it earns you 3x on gas. Like ideally, like you're more focused on the sign up bonus rather than the earn rate. So having it kind of like analyze your own wallet based on what you already have and saying, of the cards you have, here's what I would use at this point of purchase is way better than saying like, oh, I better get this card and add it to my wallet, even though there's not really a good sign-up bonus, but I might earn a few extra points on that category.
Yeah. And, you know, this feature was really inspired by y'all. You know, for a long time, we've always said, don't worry about this, like, just get a sign-up bonus. And of course, that's always going to be your best return. But if you go back and look at the demographic surveys that we've done in the past, and we'll link to those in the show notes for those of you who are interested, most of you are only opening 3 to 4 cards a year, which means there's probably a lot of opportunity that you're spending on cards where you're not in a bonus period. And because of that, we decided to kind of step back and say, how can we help you still get the most points when you're not just earning a bonus? And this tool helps you do that. It elevates the best card. It might not be the right one in your strategy, but it at least highlights to you, hey, if you just want the highest, earn the highest points, here's the best card that you've got in your wallet. Example of this, literally earlier today, I know that I'm like tooting our own horn, but I was making an online purchase and paying someone through PayPal. And like, that's one of those categories that I know sometimes shows up on cards, but I just wasn't sure. And instead of having to spend time Googling and trying to find if I've got a card that has extra spend on PayPal, I just went and checked. Plot twist, I don't. but it at least like saved me the yeah. time from having to research. And again, like having to go through all of those steps in my head. Cause if you're like me, like I've got my wallet on the back of my phone with a few cards, but then also over here on my desk, I've got my wallet that has more cards. And then I've got like some additional cards just kind of sitting out over here on the side. That I was going to show, but probably can't for compliance reasons. So
also like personal, say like finance reasons.
Details.
Yeah.
Well, but some of them it's on the back now, so I was going to pick one where it's on the back. But again, it's just about reducing that mental load and saving. It saved me probably 5 to 10 minutes of either looking through my cards and thinking or researching and thinking, oh, well, I've got this card. Does that have it? This card, does that have it? Instead, I just went there and checked and saw, nope, none of them have it. So it didn't matter too much, which like, that's kind of the point. It's to help reduce that mental load so that way you can just make decisions faster.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Excited for that one. Well, all these, but that feature as well, and to get that out in people's hands.
That's a wrap on today's round of strategies. Thanks for listening, and go put a few of these to work. We'll see you next time.